Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Happy Thursday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. We are joined by the great Mike Wall. You can find him on Twitter at MikeWall68. Of course, you can find him over on the Process to Perform channel, on the On My Block podcast and the Block Party podcast. They are both must-watches. Mike, it is great to have you back on the show.
Andy, I'd like your hat first and foremost. Thank you. Know you switched up a little bit, and I like that a lot. I like the color scheme. And it's always a pleasure to talk football with you. Thanks for having me on.
People get very upset when I don't have a Packers hat on. So I do try to do a Packers hat every once in a while. But yeah, these are the most comfortable hats. I wish I was getting sponsored for them because I wear them almost every single day. And they're insanely comfortable. And I do love the gold version. But we are here. We're here to talk Packers, of course. And I just want to start. I will let you go in any direction that you want to go in as you watch this Packers-Texans game. What were sort of your key takeaways or the things that kind of caught you, you know, most as you were kind of breaking down the tape?
Packers defense is playing really well. It was just, you know, it's crazy. So I watched the Texans a lot. And a couple of weeks ago, I went to Minnesota, and they just got absolutely – they were just confused, and it was just chaos the entire game. And I attributed a lot of that, obviously, to the scheme, the defensive scheme. But I also attributed a lot of that to the fan base and the crowd noise up there. They took a page out of the Minnesota defense. I'm talking about the Packers now. Halfley did such a good job of really putting pressure on the second-year center and the second-year quarterback. I think more than anything else, just having a communication issue, really knowing who to pick on the offensive line, and just made it impossible for, you know, what I think is a top 3 to 4 quarterback in the league to be able to set his feet at any given point in this football game. I just thought the defense played so well. Linebackers step up when Quay went down. Obviously, the defensive – I mean – have you ever seen so many free runners in your entire life? I mean, it was just absolutely insane. And so you look at it, it's like one of those games where you're, you know, I like both teams. So I'm going like, oh man, it was great. And then I'm over like, and the other half of me is like yelling at the TV for like not picking up what is considered like a real obvious pickup. So I love that part of it. And offensively, Romeo Doubs had another good day. I thought he was kind of the highlight for me as far as just, it was just like 7-11 always open. They went 3-by-1 a ton. Anytime they needed a play, they just threw the ball to him, and they really had no answer for it. I think that the Texans defense came to play. I think our guys up front, maybe, you know, I don't know if they got the best of that matchup. Certainly, I think we need to find a right guard that is going to be a physical presence inside as we move forward here into some tougher opponents. But listen, you can play ugly and win football games. Your quarterback can throw a couple of picks, you'd be -3 in turnovers, and you win football games because you're a good football team. And I think that's maybe most importantly what the Packers are proving to be.
Yeah, there's so much that I want to dive into there. And I really want your thoughts on the right guard situation because that's interesting to me. But I want to start with that Halfley defense. I really want to begin by asking you, I don't know how complicated this is going to be. So I'm going to hope that you can, I know you can walk us through it in some capacity. You're an offensive lineman, obviously. And you see 7 guys lined up at the line of scrimmage. You've got your double A gaps. You've got your 4 defensive linemen lined up in some capacity, potentially safety or a corner coming off the edge. What does that do to an offensive line? What does the communication look like pre-snap? And how hard is it to adjust if maybe the pre-snap adjustment was wrong or what you have to see on the fly based on what they're doing post-snap?
So, but as an offensive lineman, if I know that they're running stunts, I usually am really happy because I think stunts are much easier to pick up than a 1v1. Because in a stunt, like if I have a defensive tackle, he has to go to his gap. He can't go to the B gap or the A gap. He has to go to the B gap. He has to go, you know, like there's options, right. Limited in options. So I love that from a pickup standpoint. From a communication standpoint, let's use the Xavier McKinney's first sack as an example. Yep. So they've got double A's. And they've got a back on the right side. They got an offset right, and they've got a tight end hipped off to the left, Dalton Schultz. Okay, so they have everybody to pick up that blitz. If they bring everybody, it's one-on-one easy pickup. Like that is, yep. And it's really, when I say it's an easy pickup, it's the easiest you could possibly get from an offensive line standpoint. Because again, maybe one or two guys has a true one-on-one. Everybody else is running some kind of stunt where they just have to blindly go into a gap. We motion across, and Xavier McKinney comes down and sits on the line of scrimmage. Now, that right there should identify to either the quarterback, the center, somebody, that we need to have Dalton Schultz go to the left, and then we just go man-man, center goes to the left, running back goes to the right A gap, needs to step up in the gap so he doesn't get picked, right guard and a right tackle are one-on-one. So it's a relatively speaking, it's an easy pickup. The problem is, for whatever reason, between the motion and the identification, again, as good as these guys are, second-year center, second-year quarterback, second-year, first-year starting left guard who's got to do the tap thing, right? You know, he's got to look back and do the tap and identify. Like, that whole thing was just a complete disaster for this team. And so every time they brought anything that didn't look off the first point, so, like, for example, if Juice, the center's going to the right, there was no retrace. There was no remic. There was no nothing. There was, and so whatever they were going with, initially, they were going to stick with. And so again, if you have a Mike Flanagan and a Brett Favre in that position that have been in year 5 and year 15, we really don't care. But if you have a situation where you're like, oh, you know, we got 2 second year guys and we've already seen that they've had problems here, then yeah, like somebody's going to become a free runner. And again, it's not that anybody's necessarily getting beat. It's that, like, Rashawn Gary had this game, like, oh man, he's all over the place. Like, he didn't get blocked the entire day. No. It was just absolutely wild. So I don't know if I answered your question or not, but it was really a communication thing, I think, more than anything else.
No, that was perfect. And I appreciate that. And it was really interesting to see, especially because they did play Minnesota earlier and Minnesota gave them all these problems. You would have expected maybe that they would have got it sorted out a little bit more coming into this Green Bay game, but Green Bay clearly saw some of the issues that they had going against Minnesota and utilized some of those same things against them. I thought Halfley was masterful in this game. You mentioned, you know, they were able to unlock Rashawn Gary. To your point, you know, obviously the one sack, the offensive lineman falls down. There's the play where he takes a nice little stroll across the defensive line and then comes right up the middle of the defense. I think it was on the first drive of the game for the Texans offense. There's another one where he loops around and goes completely untouched and pressures the quarterback. I'd actually argue, based on some of the looks he got, he maybe could have been a little bit more productive in this game, but still it was nice to see Rashawn Gary getting after the quarterback and making an impact. And I credit a ton of that. And as I kind of went through and watched the tape in this one, it wasn't a lot of like unbelievable individual performances. It was a lot of Jeff Halfley getting players in advantageous positions and getting them in spots where they could go succeed against this Texans offense.
There's a couple of things there. One, very rarely are you going to hear me say that like scheme actually won the game, and this week scheme won the game for sure. Yeah. What happens is so Halfley and Slovic know each other, and Slovic's running the old 49ers offense, and so of course there's some familiarity there. What happens in these offenses, I talked about this on my show yesterday. Let's take Shanahan's offense is kind of the A-list premier Shanahan-style offense. Like, they've got the most answers. They've got the most sets. They have the most kind of personnel groups that fit the profile of the players that they need. Quarterbacks can make the most adjustments. Center knows the most calls. Like, let's just call them the gold standard, okay? They're in the second year down in Houston of the kind of same offense, but they're in year 2. They're not in year, like, 6 or 7. Right, just like Matt LaFleur's offense, there in year, we can call it either year 2 or year 4 or 5, depending on what you want to, you know, is Jordan Love the cutoff point or not? So the amount of kind of iteration, the evolution of that is so limited, maybe compared to what we're used to seeing, like the Niners or the Rams, that they just don't have those adjustments in. I think what you saw and what you see with some of these offenses now, I was just watching like the Jags, what you see is some offenses and defenses can start out in these base packages. And then when they get to the point where they have to make a lot of adjustments, they have to make the adjustments at halftime. So they can't make the adjustments from snap to snap or even from series to series. And for whatever reason, the Texans have shown in 2 games on the road that's kind of where they're at. And I think Halfley did such a good job of identifying where the pressure points are. Like, the further away you are from the center, the more problems they tend to have as far as identifying you to pick up. And the other thing is, when you're in that spot and you're playing, like, you know, just for your fans, if you're a second year center, a second year quarterback, most of your protection adjustments are going to start with an L or an R. So, like, if you just have your guys listening to what's going on, like the backside guys, they say Louie, you know, Lou, anything like that, Lenny, like, left defensive tackle, and then like, okay, we're going to run a set now because we're on our own. So like, you kind of start figuring this stuff out as you go through it, especially with guys like Kenny Clark and veterans on the interior of that offensive line. So yeah, great job. But again, really, really good job by Halfley scheming this team up. They beat them with scheme for sure.
No, I think that makes a ton of sense. Well, I know one of the things that you talked about this week as well is the impact of Kenny Clark, and it wasn't necessarily always on the stat sheet. What did you see out of Kenny this week that made him a little bit more impactful?
Well, I think both, you know, if you look at where the weaknesses or the soft spots are, we talked about it last week on the Texans, is the interior offensive line. I think they took advantage. I have a find the fish segment on my show, and they found the fish in their left guard. They certainly took advantage of him all day. Kenny Clark was bullying people all day, being able to throw him around and toss him on the ground. But also, even Shaq Mason wasn't quite up to the task a couple times as far as being able to deal with kind of the strength and power of Kenny. That the penetration, we've talked about it before. They're getting more used to, and he's getting more used to, you know, how to pay a true penetrating three technique in this defense, while being able to stay in your gap, stay on track, being able to break back down and redirect if you have to. So better job with your hands, better job with your base and your footwork. I just think that as you continue to evolve as a football player, you switch defenses and understand what the requirements are to be successful in this defense, Kenny's only going to continue to play better. And certainly there's just days in the league, and you guys who play know this, like, there's days where you're going, okay, there's a guy out there that I'm going to beat, and I'm going to beat him a lot. And I think that's what they found a little bit weak.
Yeah, that left guard, Kenyon Green, right? Like, he's definitely a player that I thought going into the game could have taken advantage of and did take advantage of in this game. And yep. I think, you know, Kenny's settling into the season. He's settling into the new defense. I think he's played better the last few weeks, and I still think he's going to have a massive impact on this team. And I think we started to see it a little bit this week against Houston. On the flip side, I'm wondering, and maybe you see it differently, and which is, if so, that's awesome. I'm still struggling to see LVN from a pass rush standpoint of where his pass rush plan is and how he can potentially get to the quarterback. It felt like I liked his effort as a run defender this week. I thought for the most part he did good there, but from a pass rush standpoint, it felt like he was just running into kind of a brick wall every single time. And it just feels like there's got to be a different sort of pass rush plan there that we haven't really seen to this point in his career. Where are you at with LVN and what could maybe potentially unlock him? Hey everybody, it's week 8. Week 8! Slow down season, you're going way, way, way too fast. But there's still plenty of NFL season left, which means there's still plenty of Prize Picks winning to be done. Right now, when you sign up on Prize Picks, you get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the bonus. It is guaranteed. Make your picks in less than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long. Of course, Prize Picks is the best place to get real money sports action, and you can join over 10 million users who are already signed up. This week, I'm going with kickers. You heard me right. I am going with kickers. Justin Tucker, he is going to kick a ton of field goals against the Browns. Young Wei Koo is going to kick a bunch against the Bucks, and Brandon McManus is going to do well in his return to Jacksonville. So it is kicker week for me on Prize Picks. As always, there are plenty of options for you to choose from, but remember, whoever you choose, you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly when you play $5. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly when you play $5. Prize Picks, run your game.
Well, I told you last week, he's not going to beat Laremy Tunsil. I mean, he's just, yeah. I mean, you're talking apples and oranges. Yep. But just generally speaking, you like what he does from the run. I mean, when you watch this tape at Iowa, you go, oh yeah, he's a strong player against the run. He can't rush the pass. You said that, you know, that was kind of day one. So the problem with the unfortunate thing with LVN is that he was drafted so highly that you expect that he can do things that he really can't do. And it's kind of baked in, at least to the fan base, that he's supposed to have be this dynamic pass rusher when he never was. And we don't know if he ever will be, but at the point he's not. How to unlock him? That's a really good question, because I have yet this year or last year to see a single rush that I thought was going to defeat the player he was playing against. I think that at best he might give you a chop or a double swipe that's poorly timed, and then everything's going to turn into a pull because he's so strong, because he's so persistent. I think he's going to have a lot of those effort plays But you just don't know without some real coaching of having a true pass rush specialist come in and work with him and understand leverage points and understand everything about, like, everything about what he's doing from his first step on is very, very easy. Like, if I have a book on him, and if I showed you the book on him, like, he's, without insulting anybody, just based on his technique and what he does, he's very easy to block. And so it's just a question of, you have to understand what leverage points are, how you make an offensive lineman uncomfortable, how you disrupt the rhythm. And because you are so strong, explosive, and powerful, you need to be using that, using angles to exploit that, maybe more so than just trying to run upfield and go right down the middle.
Yeah, I'm waiting for, again, some sort of pass rush plan, an upgrade in a move. I thought maybe a long arm would be something that he could have successful with. And like you said, maybe using a little bit of that leverage, but it just really hasn't come along. And again, this was a tough assignment this week against Laramie Tunsil. I totally get that. And he does give the effort, which I appreciate. And he's going to get some of those effort sacks. But man, you were certainly, you know, like you said, when you're drafted that high, there's certainly an expectation that comes along with it. And it's not always fair. It just is what it is. And just really hoping that he can kind of put together something that will make him a little bit more of an impact performer along that defensive line, because Green Bay could definitely use it right now. You know, Preston's a nice rotational player at this point in his career, and Igbari, same thing, but they need some of those impact plays. And to your point earlier with Rashawn Gary, it was great to see him be impactful in this game, but it was a lot of unblocked plays. So I just don't see a lot of, especially defensive ends, winning a bunch of one-on-ones at this point in the season. And I think at some point, when you want to get to where you want to get to, you're going to have to win those one-on-one matchups up front in order to have that success defensively. It's great what Jeff Hafley's doing right now, but at some point you got to beat the guy across from you.
Yeah, it's tough. And I listen, you go into every game and you kind of circle, okay, like this person has a chance to win. And you want to be able to say that about more guys than fewer, obviously, on your team. And you look at the Packers this past weekend, and Rashawn Gary's not going to beat Tytus Howard very often. Tytus Howard goes about 350 and can dance. Like, he's a dancing bear. He's an absolute monster. LVN or Preston, they're not going to beat the Laramie Tunsil very often. But you look inside, and you know kind of exactly what you thought might happened. The mismatches were inside, and they took advantage of the mismatches, both schematically, both in one-on-ones. Carl Brooks beat the left guard a handful of times. Everybody, you know, took a turn at kind of winning, whether it was a game or a one-on-one block or in the run game. So you're going to find those opportunities. And I think what is lost on a lot of teams now is coaches, you know, when you're looking to like defensive scheme, you start going, okay, well, you know, you start going, oh, who are their guys? Who do we have to take away? What do they do on first and second down? What are they doing in the red? What are they doing on third down? What are their favorite protections? What's their favorite plays? What do they do after turnover? But at some point in that estimation, it's like, where's the fish? Who can we beat? Like, who on their team can we exploit? And particularly if you can exploit somebody on the offensive line, you want to do that. I think Hafley's doing a really good job of that. But to your point, there are really good offensive lines in this league that you're not just going to be able to win one-on-one matchups unless you upgrade either by personnel or by technique that defensive end position.
Yeah, it's going to be something that's worth monitoring, and hopefully they can get a little bit more impact from those guys moving forward as the rest of the season moves along. I want to switch to the offensive side of the ball. It was interesting to hear after the game when Matt LaFleur got to his press conference, basically saying in as many words that the Texans defense kicked their ass. And we kind of saw that a good chunk of the day. This is one of the first times I really felt like the opposing defense was just maybe a half step ahead of Matt for a decent part of the day. And it just felt like they had everything covered. It felt like Green Bay tried to get things going horizontally. They couldn't get things going horizontally, try to get play action, try to get stuff going in the middle. And they just couldn't really find any sort of specific rhythm. To your point earlier, when they needed something, they were able to go to Romeo Doubs. You had the big play to Tucker Kraft, Dontavian Wicks. There were definitely some explosives in there, but for the most part, it just felt like Houston's defense was a half step ahead. What did you see from this Texans defense that gave Green Bay trouble?
They play like their coach played. For me, D'Amico Ryan's played like that. So they had so many. I think they had five players injured. So they had Alshier and Batua were both injured. So Neville Hewitt, I've known Neville Hewitt since like 2015. He's an absolute anvil. Like, he hits like an absolute anvil. And we found out early. Josh Myers found out, I think, the second play of the game. And when you bring that kind of physical presence in, and then you got a guy like Jan Petrie at 200 pounds who basically ran right through Zach Tom on the first toss play. So they're a physical team. They play physical. They like to play man, and they like the pressure. You knew that coming in. And the question was, are you going to be able to take advantage of those man opportunities? But we kind of in the same vein, you don't necessarily in 1v1 situations have the guys front to withstand the from a timing standpoint, what you need so that Jordan Love has enough time to get some of those deeper routes that you need against man. Like the stuff in man that's not open is the immediate stuff. Like the longer range plays are what you feast on in man coverage. But if you can't get rid of the ball because you're running for your life, well, you got a real problem. And I think we kind of saw that a little bit with this team. I think this Texans defense just plays extremely hard. And every once in a while, especially the AFC, the NFC teams, and we did this with the Packers as well, you get to an AFC team and you just kind of get punched. The Titans did this to us a couple times. You just kind of get punched in the mouth. Like, man, they play real physical over there. And yeah. I just don't know if the Packers offense was used to it.
Yeah, it felt like there was a little bit of an adjustment period. And I still feel mostly good about the fact that they were able to put up 24 points, get 3 points when they needed to against a defense that I thought played really, really well in this game, despite missing some starters. But yeah, I think that was a little bit of an adjustment game for them. And hopefully they kind of learn from that and are ready for that sort of physicality, because they're definitely going to need to be come the postseason, if and hopefully when they get there. You brought up that right guard spot. I'm curious. I know you're more of a, we talked about last week, maybe Jordan Morgan fits a little bit better at left tackle. They didn't do quite as much rotating here. It was a lot of Sean Ryan. I think it was only maybe 13, 14 snaps of Jordan Morgan in this one. But what are you seeing at right guard, and maybe what would you like to see maybe be improved a little bit?
Well, I don't know that I think I'd pencil him in at left tackle to start.
No, yeah, sorry. I should have clarified that.
Listen, I think it doesn't serve anybody well to split time. Make a decision and live with it. I understand why they do it. I just have, you know, as a player, I think it's really difficult. Jordan Morgan came in on his first play. Footwork win. This is a footwork league, and footwork wise, he got beat on, I think, on his very first play. Now, Josh Jacobs made something, you know, made chicken salad again and got like a 4 yard gain. But it just, you know, if you want to play in there, you got to be a real physical presence. And I think it's the second week in the row that he wasn't. So you got to, you know, then you give Sean Ryan the opportunity. And for whatever reason, this is, I think, the second week in a row with Sean Ryan where you just go, okay, that wasn't quite up to standard. Now, last week you talked about he might have had an injury. This week he's, again, playing against some really aggressive guys that play downhill football and maybe a little bit not the style that they're used to playing. So I think that has an impact on it as well. But you are getting some free rushers and late rushers from that area. You are getting some bodies in the backfield from that area. You are having some problems with your double teams in that area. You're not getting the movement you want. So that area, if you just keep putting the red circle in the same spot on the screen, it's like, okay, something needs to give. And what that is, you know, necessarily, I don't know. I think for me, it's more of a focus on, okay, what is the one or two things, Sean, that we can really do right now to improve your game and kind of get rid of the problems that we're having with the backside B, for example, or your short set, for example. Let's just take one or two things and really work and to improve on them. Sometimes this gets a little bit overwhelming and the coaches are saying, oh, you're too high, your footwork's bad, blah, 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 blah. It's like, let's just find two things you can work on. Let's work on them all week and let's see where we are next week. And that's usually the best way to handle it, but who knows if, you know, that's actually what they're doing.
Yeah, sometimes it can be paralysis by analysis and you just need to take small bites rather than try to chew off everything all at once. And that's definitely something that I try to do, because sometimes I try to go all in on one thing and it just ends up becoming a disaster. So hopefully they can get a little bit of that cleaned up. I do like overall the way that Sean Ryan's playing a little bit more than Jordan Morgan. I understand the rotation and trying to get him some snaps to improve, but they're going to have to, I think, sort of figure that out sooner rather than later and figure out what that exact right mixture is, just kind of like they're doing on the secondary side of things right now. I cannot think of maybe a better person to ask than you for this question. We've seen a lot of Jordan Love / Brett Favre comparisons over the course of the last few weeks and just kind of his play style and things like that. You obviously got a up close and personal view of the one and only Brett Favre very, very often. And so I would love to hear your thoughts on these comparisons between Jordan Love and Brett Favre.
Yeah, I think the risk reward profile is probably more similar than maybe the coach wants at times, at least. But I'll tell you what, it's kind of like you live by the sword that you die by the sword. And as fans, as teammates, you can't sit here and glaze him on Twitter last week because he throws up a jump ball to Romeo Doubs in the corner and say, oh, what a great throw. No, it wasn't. Or the one to Jaden Reed when he threw into triple coverage a couple weeks ago. Because they caught the ball. It's like you can't love the outcome and then hate this outcome. It's like you can't live that way. So if you like the guy then, you got the guy last week when he throws a couple up with bad footwork. And that's just part of the deal. he'll continue to evolve. I think what happens is, too, you have to understand, like, these guys are so supremely talented, and their arms are, you know, it's like, try telling Patrick Mahomes' feet aren't right. I dare you. You know, I could still make any throw. So Jordan Love has the kind of athleticism and arm strength and obviously football IQ where he's going, I got this. I can cover up some of the stuff that you're like, you armchair guys are talking about, or even their coaches. I can cover some of that stuff because I'm so supremely talented. So they're still working on it. It's not like he's not a work in progress, but you can see like sometimes the confidence gets ahead of the talent a little bit. And that certainly was, I mean, that's true for any good quarterback, to be fair.
Yeah, it almost feels like, to an extent, especially after the big contract and the year he had last year, that there's a little bit of feeling out of like, what can I do? What can I get away with? Like, what are the peak of my powers? And I don't necessarily mind that. I think that's part of a quarterback's learning curve, is trying to figure out what they can and can't get away with in the NFL. And I think he's learning, you know, some of those lessons of, all right, can't do that. Oh, I can do this. And to your point too, like it's tough sometimes when you take some of those big plays down the field, you maybe take a chance or two and they get paid off, and it kind of gets you like, all right, I can do this. And I think there's just sort of a balancing act with that. And I think he'll figure it out. We saw him take great care of the football in the second half of last year. And I think he'll kind of, I want to say regress back to that, but he'll get back to that where he'll kind of figure out where those lines are. And I think overall the high end plays that he's making are more than worth it. And I'm sure Tom Clements will be able to work with him on a couple of those throws of like, hey, maybe let's just make a little bit of a different decision there. But I think he's trending in all the right ways. And it's really fun to see the brand of football that he's playing and some of the explosive plays that he's able to come up with.
Yeah. And the other thing is, you got to remember now, like the standard for completion percentage is like 70%. You know, I mean, the life's different now than it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think it's better. Like sometimes you want, especially if you're playing man coverage all day, it's like, well, yeah, man, take some shots. Like this is what we're here for. People want to see, you know, you don't go to the Coliseum to watch guys stick fight, but you watch them sword fight. So it's like, if you're going to go ahead and play one-on-one matchups, you're going to give me opportunity to throw the ball. I'm going to throw the damn football and see what happens. I mean, that's part of the deal. So maybe your percentages aren't going to be as good. Maybe you're going to have a couple to get away. And remember, that's a really, really talented secondary as well. I would be, you know, more like his second pick, for example, that came right off the first play right off the second touchdown was like, why did he throw that pick? Well, because he got pressured. You know, yep. Danielle Hunter wouldn't, you know, hit him right in the side. He's got to drift out of the way. And those things happen. And so like, we'll tuck in and run. Like, man, you can't tell. It's like shoot or shoot. And that's just part of this game. And I think you have to embrace a lot of that. Yeah, I don't know. That's why we love Brett, man. Brett threw five picks, I think, in St. Louis. And like all of us were, yep, like, dude, just 14. We don't care. Two jet all go. Let's do it.
I remember that game very, very well. And yes, the interesting thing about that Jordan throw, where he gets hit by Daniil, it's really hard to tell from the all 22 angle. It kind of feels like as he's following through, like he can't entirely follow through on the play. And that's kind of why it sails a little bit. If he doesn't get hit on that play, I would have kind of have loved to have seen where that ball ended up. Cause there's a chance, I think, that ball might end up right on Christian Watson. And as I watched it live, I didn't think there was any chance of that because the safety was coming over. And again, you probably still need to, you know, maybe live to see another down on that or whatever the case may be. But I think if he maybe doesn't get hit on that follow through, that might be an interesting play to Christian Watson where maybe he even pulls it off. Who knows? It's tough to say. Let's go to Packers in Jacksonville this upcoming week. What are some of the keys that you're going to be watching for as Green Bay tries to escape with a win out of Jacksonville?
Well, they've been up and down, certainly. Doug P. has been in a battle coach this year. I think he's been on the hot seat since day one. Trevor Lawrence is just supremely talented when you watch him. I mean, the kid's got a ridiculous arm on him. Obviously, there's the run-pass threat there that you always have to look at. They like to spread everybody out on offense. They'll do a lot of things that are no tight ends attached, try to get you to put five in the box and run the ball. They have some good running backs in the backfield. So I think they're going to continue to try to do that against us. Certainly when you see how much pressure that we were bringing, when you put multiple tight ends in the game, it would make sense for the Jaguars to continue to have it spread out, run a lot of the RPO stuff, kind of let, you know, Trevor Lawrence try to feed on that a little bit, let that offensive line block a clean box. And then defensively, they're usually talking about Josh Allen right now, but really he's been kind of quiet this year, still supremely talented. It's just one of those things. Sometimes you're not getting the numbers. Trayvon Walker, just from a physical standpoint, is really kind of showing up. You know, they don't look like they're a 2-4, whatever they are, team. When you watch them on defense, particularly the box, you just like, it's like, I like that guy. I like that guy. I everyone that's playing in the box, like, I'd like to watch. They play fast. Their linebackers are super aggressive to the ball. Their defensive ends are running the quarterback. Their tackles can rush the passer. They play in the backfield. Like, you love every, as a fan, you love everything that you see. But there's just a disconnect with winning right now. And I think this will be a really interesting game if the Packers can offensively, if the Packers can kind of count for both those defensive ends and really get the under center play action pass and everything going, the linebackers will really suck up and you have an opportunity to throw in the backfield. The one thing the Jaguars do, just to watch this as a fan, is they run some crazy, like, they'll start in a bunch of different coverages and they'll end up in, like, you know, basically cover two, Tampa two, they'll run a cover two convert where they'll kick the safety of the side, back the corner up to play the two shell. So they do a lot of stuff and it doesn't necessarily help them. Like, it actually hurts. Like, New England actually ate on a lot of those plays. So it'll be interesting to see how they play with a much more complicated offense in Green Bay than they saw last week, or last 2 weeks, really.
Yeah, I think Matt LaFleur, I'm sure, will be all over that. Any sort of weakness that he sniffs, he's usually going to attack pretty aggressively. So if he senses a couple of those, I'm sure he's going to attack them aggressively. Green Bay obviously had this last game where they go against Anderson and Hunter. So they're definitely accustomed now to playing against two very talented defensive ends. So hopefully that helps them a little bit in this one. And then I think there's some holes in that secondary that Green Bay can exploit. Darnell Savage, old Green Bay Packer, playing back there. He's playing a little bit more slot corner than at the true safety position. A lot of people, I think, wanted to see that in Green Bay. Hasn't gone super according to plan for him in Jacksonville so far. Antonio Johnson's another one I think you can pick on a little bit. So he saw his snaps decrease a little bit last week, though. So we'll see what kind of game plan they have for him. But overall, I think if they can protect up front, to your point, against those two good defensive ends, I think there's going to be opportunities to exploit that secondary.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, it's funny. This really is a game of moments. And you just go back to this last game. I was thinking about this yesterday. Jaden Reed catches that ball over the middle. Neville Hewitt body slams him. So they get the first down. They score two plays later. Jordan Love escapes the pocket. Throws across to Jaden Reed. What is a really close call. PI, first down. Score two plays later. You know, I mean, and the swing pass. It's like there's three or four. What's his name on C.J. Stroud hits him in the – hits Tank Dell in the chest in the end zone. And he drops the ball. And it's – I know the game doesn't really boil down to those moments, but it boils down to these couple moments in each game. And I think what's fun about watching, like, the Packers versus the Jaguars is when you see a secondary like that, there's a lot more of those moments. Those moments come up a lot more. So it's like there's a – you know, it's razor margins when you're talking about a team like the Texans and the Packers that are I think, relatively close together, both two really good teams in the NFL. I think this Jaguars team has some really good players. They're not quite at the same level as the Green Bay Packers. So if these guys play to their capabilities, you're going to see a lot more of those kind of opportunities to blow up in this game.
One of my favorite articles that I used to write, this is a while back, was an article called Shatter Points. And it was the three or four plays in the game where if they go just a hair differently, how it could have completely altered the entirety of the game. And there were a bunch of those in this Houston game. Obviously, the field goal kick at the end, but the Tank Dell one, that, to your point, the play where it looks like it's almost going to be a backward pass. If that is just slightly more backwards, that's a huge fumble recovery. Instead, a couple plays later, it's a touchdown to Dontavian Wicks where they go kind of hurry up. So, like, those are always really, really fun for me to look at. Don't write it anymore, but that was always really fun. And there's definitely usually three or four of those, sometimes a little bit more, that if they just go a hair different, who knows how the game ends up differently.
Yeah. That's the fun thing about football. You don't have a clue about what, when they're going to happen, you know, and yes. That's like, it's like for, you know, we always talk about an offensive lineman. If you have 70 good plays and two bad ones, you didn't have a bad game, but it's like everybody said you did. It's like, well, we don't know what happened. What would have happened if I would have had three bad plays? It could have been a real disaster. You know what I mean? So that's just one way to
think
about it.
That's the old Mighty Ducks. If it hits the post, or it hits the post, but if he would have hit it a little bit the other way, it would have completely missed the goal entirely. The old Gordon Bombay moment. But amazing stuff as always, Mike. Always appreciate you coming on and talking ball. It is educational and rewarding and amazing every single time. Tell everyone where we can find all of your amazing film breakdowns and work.
Yeah, we got Black Party on the Prostitute Perform channel on YouTube. You can check that also. Audible, wherever you get your Audible. But if you want to listen to it audio, you can get it wherever you get your podcasts. Hit me up at Michael68 on Twitter, Prostitute Perform on Instagram. Andy, thanks as always for having me, man. Always fun.
Yeah, you bet. We'll talk next week, hopefully, about a victory over the Jacksonville Jaguars. And we'll get set for what should be a very fun game, Packers-Lions, before Green Bay hits their bye week. Go follow all of his work. Again, Prostitute Perform channel. It is worth checking out every single week. The film breakdowns are absolutely amazing. Again, you can find him on Twitter at MikeWall68. You can find me at AndyHermanNFL. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.